We all know about the curse of shame, the guilt, the heavy emotional load. But what about the cure? Is there one? Yes, you can win in the race of life. You can win over shame. Today, you're about to hear a powerful teaching on how to get rid of shame for good and live in the freedom of having a clear conscience. Please stay with us. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Our current series explains why good people do bad things. Dr. Lutzer comes now to tell us about the cure for shame, a cure based on the work of Christ on the cross, as revealed in Isaiah chapter 53.
Does shame cause the destruction of a person's reputation? Yes. He was despised and he was rejected of men. Does shame silence us? Yes. He was led as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is dumb, so he opened not his mouth. Does shame expose our obvious weaknesses? Yes, he was derided. He saved others. Himself he cannot save. Does shame lead to abandonment? Yes. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Does shame diminish people? Yes, it diminishes people. He was crucified naked as the gawkers walked by. How did Jesus handle the shame? How did he take it? There's a second text in the book of Hebrews, chapter 12. We look unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame. The NIV says, scorning it. What he was saying in effect is, bring it on. Bring it on. Let me bear the shame of the world. Let me take the load of sin. Let me take the guilt. Here I am, crucify me. Shame, try to destroy me if you can. And what Jesus said as a result of his death and then the subsequent resurrection is this, that he says to you and me, shame cannot permanently cripple. Shame cannot permanently destroy. Shame, like death, has the sting taken out of it. There is a remedy, and you need not be crippled by it. I like to put it this way. I think Jesus shamed shame. It's a shame on you, shame. I'll bear the load, and in the end, you'll have no authority over me. What do we do with our shame? Number one, our shame must be covered. It must be covered. When David committed the twin sins of murder and then adultery, first of all, and then murder to cover it up. What a cover up. What a cover up. And yet David is famous for his sin. The cover up simply did not work. Finally, when he came clean and he confessed his sin, he said in Psalm 32, blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven and whose sin is covered. When God sewed those skins together to clothe Adam and Eve, as I've already mentioned, it was a picture of the coming clothing of Jesus, his righteousness, to cover the ugliness of our shame. It says in the book of Revelation, Jesus said, come and take my garments, that the shame of your nakedness may not appear. There is a covering for the shame. And that is the forgiveness of God. It is the grace of God. The first is, our shame must be covered. The second is, our shame must be surrendered. Surrendered. Because here's what some of you are thinking. You're saying, yes, I am forgiven in the sight of God, to be sure. But what about if my friends find out? There are things that maybe you have done that if the truth were known and these things were exposed, you would find so much shame. David struggled with that, a terrible amount. You know, I was reading the Psalms this week. For example, in Psalm 25, twice he prays, "Oh God, let me not be ashamed. Let me not be ashamed." Over and over again, he says, "Remember not the sins of my youth. Let me not be ashamed." And yet he was ashamed as the truth came out. But the reason that David said that he could handle it is this. He knew that his sin had now been covered by God and forgiven by God and taken away by God. Therefore, whatever human beings could do to him, no matter how he disappointed them, no matter how ill they would think of him, at the end of the day, there was nothing that could be uncovered about his life that was not already known by God and forgiven by God. And therefore, David said, "I can go on. I don't have to stop." Despite the shame, God walks with us through that shame. Our shame must be covered, our shame must be surrendered, and our shame must be replaced. It must be replaced. I think of the story of Tamar in the Old Testament, who was raped, a terrible rape by her half-brother Amnon, and she put ashes on her head, and she walked away in humiliation and shame. God says in Isaiah 61, "I will take the ashes of humiliation and the ashes of shame, and I will give you instead the beauty of a garland." He says, "I will take the oil of gladness and give it to you instead of mourning, and I will give you the garments of praise instead of fainting." I'm going to give you something to substitute for that awful shame, and it will be put away so that you can march on. It must be covered, it must be surrendered, it must be replaced. I conclude with a story. I have a man who is a very good friend of mine. If you would have asked me 10 or 15 years ago, name the three top friends in the world, top three or four, I think that he would have been among them. It's just the kind of friendship, you know, that when you meet, you don't have to try to even reestablish things. You kind of take up where you let off and where you can just relax and you know that you're accepted. And he committed immorality, and then in order to deal with the shame, he disappeared and actually went to another state and changed his name, trying to disappear off the face of the earth. About 6 months later, his identity was finally found out, and shortly after that, I was making a trip to that state and made it a point to contact him. God used me as one of the first people to minister to this dear man who is living in such unbelievable shame that he seemed to be unable to face anyone he ever knew. I remember sitting at the table and he was talking and he said, "Just think of it this way." He says, "Think of an onion." He says, "And you peel away one layer and then you peel away the other." He said, "The opinion of people meant so much to me." He says, "My board, my congregation," he said, "everybody, they meant so much. And now I not only had disappointed all of them in this way, but also in trying to cover it up only increased my shame." He said that it was as if all the peelings of the onion were peeled away and there was absolutely nothing in the center. Nothing. I did not have one friend in the world. I was despised. I was spoken about. People said, "How could he do it? We thought higher of him." And it was just, it's just awful. He said, "When I got up in the morning, my first question was, do I have the strength to take one step and then take another and then a third step? Can I get through till the evening?" And then he began to understand God's forgiveness and God's grace, which he, of course, accepted. And slowly he asked himself the question, "What do I do about my shame? Do I just live in isolation? Do I just say no to all of my friends for the rest of my life?" And he thought, "No, you know, I'm not going to do that. If God has forgiven all of my deceit and my sin, if it is covered, I can surrender that shame to him and I can go back and rebuild bridges." And he did. He went to his parents, which was very difficult. They were godly people. He went back to his friends because he said, "I will not permanently be crippled by shame. I remember driving down a street with him, and he said, I'm going to put in a favorite tape of mine. And I said, go ahead, do it. And it was Dave Boyer singing, Calvary Covers It All. And as that song began to come through the stereo system of his car, he pulled off on the side of the road. He was weeping too much, and we just sat there and cried together. Calvary covers it all. My sin with its guilt and stain. We could say it's guilt, my guilt and shame. My guilt and despair, Jesus took on him there. And Calvary covers it all. Today, this man is being used of the Lord. You say, well, it's not the same, though. Of course it's not the same. It wasn't the same for Adam and Eve. They couldn't go back to paradise. There's no going back to the beginning. There are consequences here. But it's not the end of the road. Because remember, the purpose of the cross is to repair the irreparable. That's why Jesus died. Is to die for things that could never, ever quite be the same again. I say to those of you today who are, what shall I say, your prisons of fear and your prisons of shame, your prisons of insecurity, you're absorbed by what people think about you because of the possibility of being exposed, I say, come to the Savior. Your shame can be covered, can be surrendered and replaced with God's blessing. For the purpose of the cross is to repair the irreparable. Yes, my friend, today I want to ask you a question. What is it that is holding you back from coming to Christ? This is Pastor Lutzer. Perhaps today I'm speaking to someone who is filled with self-condemnation. You hate yourself, like a young woman that I counseled just yesterday, who was thinking about suicide, hating herself. Oh, how desperately she needed to come to Jesus. Perhaps it's self-condemnation, maybe it's the condemnation that other people have put upon you. It's that sense of failure, and you believe that others perceive you in a certain way, and that may be true or it may not be true, but here's the point. There's really no reason at all why anything, including self-condemnation or the condemnation of others, there's no reason why these things should prevent you from coming to Jesus. And like my friend that I just spoke about in the message, it's possible for you to understand that Jesus died for sinners. My guilt with its sin and shame, my guilt and despair, Jesus took on him there. Would you take it from my heart to yours today as you remember that Calvary covers it all?
Dr. Erwin Lutzer, concluding The Curse and Cure of Shame, the third message in a 9-part series on Why Good People Do Bad Things. Monday, we uncover the roots of rage. Don't miss our next broadcast. Running to Win comes to you from the Moody Church in Chicago. You're hearing Why Good People Do Bad Things. This series is now a book, which we'd like to send as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Ask about Why Good People Do Bad Things. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw, all one word, .com. Or write to Running to Win at Box 11174, Chicago, Illinois, 60611. This is Dave McAllister. Don't miss our next Running to Win.